We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
How about I go ahead and address the larger than average elephant in the room?
No, I have never coached the sport that you folks call football. And heck, you could fill two internets with what I don't know about football.
Hold on, man. If I were to get fired from a job where I'm putting cleats in the trunk of my car.
You got the boot for putting boots in the boot.
I love that. You know what the happiest animal on earth is? It's a goldfish. You know why?
No.
Got a 10-second memory. Be a goldfish, Sam.
All right, welcome back to Big Screen Sports, the podcast where all movies are sports movies. I am your host, Kyle Bandujo. We have reached Amsterdam in Ted Lasso season. Very, very excited. Great episode ahead. Me, Caroline Darney, Alex McDaniel, maybe a special appearance from Mike Golick Jr. Don't know yet. We haven't recorded. But before we get into it, I want to shout out our new patrons. This is the most we have ever announced on an episode. Shout out to Kurt Ritchie, Robert Dove, and Jim Scroggs joining up as Big Chill producer-level patrons. And my guy, Andrew Teagle, returning as a producer-level patron. And as always, want to shout out all our producers, which is a lot. I'm not going to be able to do this in one breath anymore. A shout out to Aaron Figueroa, Mike Schubert, Steve Rogers, Kevin Frost, Mike D, Ryan Yeager, Mike Dries, Chris Mikoski, John Craig, Sam Smith, Zach Rich, Jason Alba, Stephen DeBoe, Dan McFall, Kevin Inkelman, Mac Lindsay, Kurt Ritchie, Robert Dove, Jim Scroggs, Andrew Teagle, and Classic Stadium Fire. Big thanks to them and all of our patrons for supporting this show. Huge shout out. That is humbling every time I read it. But if you go to patreon.com/bigscreensports, you can support this show and tune in to our first movie live watch. It is happening next week. Tune in for it. It'll be good. If you're listening to this because you're a Ted Lasso fan, and if you aren't, I don't know why you're listening. For episodes that are recorded after the Ted Lasso episode drops, you can get in Ted Lasso mailbag questions or just general mailbag questions. Going to be doing that a lot. So big shout out to all of our patrons, especially our producer level patrons. I am sure this is going to be a long episode, so without further ado, let's get into it. Me, Caroline Darney, Alex McDaniel, talking Ted Lasso, Season 3, Episode 6. All right, joining Big Screen Sports tonight is my co-host Caroline Darney and Alex McDaniel. Guys, a special episode. We're in Amsterdam. Did this one live up to the hype?
Is that a question? Is that a question? Did it live up to the hype? We've been talking about Amsterdam for 6 weeks now.
You've been talking about Amsterdam for like 8 months.
That's true.
Amsterdam. Loved it, guys.
Rap air horn, you can kind of hear.
12 out of 10. I loved it. I'm obsessed with this episode. I'm trying to be reasonable, which is difficult. It might be my favorite episode of the series.
It's dramatic.
I'm usually the one who rolls into an episode with like all the hyperbole, but
loved it. Okay. It was one of those, like, I had high expectations because Alex has been talking about this for like 8 months.
exaggerating.
but you know, there's like this expectation around it where like big things are happening in Amsterdam. We're going to get so many answers. And I think that we did, and we did it all in this like super fun one night fashion where we got stories. I love an ensemble pair up situation.
Yes.
I love when a great cast of characters pairs up or groups up and you get to see sometimes different interactions, sometimes interactions with the same people, but in a different way, which those are two different things. So it was similar to me for like Infinity War with Avengers, like when we got Thor going off with Groot and Rocket. love that. You know, like, I love those types of like mishmash groupings, and I think we got a ton of fun. I loved just a little bit of Higgins and Will Kitman. I don't know if his name is actually Kitman or if it's like Kitman is his last name or whatever. Kitman is his last, and whatever.
I think that's supposed to be his last name.
It's his last name.
Okay, good. I thought I was making that up, or it was like some play on words that Ted did. The Jamie and Roy stuff is iconic. We will get into Rebecca. I loved it. And anything that has that much Van Gogh, chef's kiss. Love it. Loved it.
Alex, do you want to make some acknowledgments about things you were right about, things you weren't as right about?
I have been wrong on this podcast like 99% of the time. I said last week that I've never dropped a theory on this podcast that I did not qualify by saying I could be totally wrong. That's been wrong before. But I do think it's important to acknowledge how I realized I was wrong. Because if you remember last week, I was like, hey, let's throw out the possibility that that phone call she got from the fertility doctor wasn't that she can't have kids, but actually that she was pregnant. And I had a whole thing. You can go back and listen if you care that much about it. But in like the first 10 seconds of Amsterdam, it's called Sunflowers. We're calling it Amsterdam. First 10 seconds, she's like downing champagne. So I texted Kyle and Caroline and I was like, okay, I was wrong. Or Rebecca's playing fast and loose with how much champagne this fetus can handle.
Then she goes, no more spoilers.
No more spoilers. That's the only one I'm giving you.
It was legitimately not even 45 seconds after she texted us that she was starting the episode.
Yeah.
Like, she followed it, I think, 8 minutes later with just a whole bunch of capital letters. And then you're like, okay, now no more spoilers.
I know. But I do, look, I admit when I'm wrong. And I was wrong about that one. And I do not give a shit. Because I was right about so much in this episode, and that is enough for me. It's a balm. I love it. I'm a little out of my head tonight, fellow listeners.
I'm excited. I think just obviously we are here to talk about Ted Lasso season 3, episode 6, Sunflowers. A friendly match takes the team to Amsterdam, where one night out unlocks truths for many. I would say this is the show's... Are we calling this a bottle episode, kind of in the same vein as Christmas or Beard After Hours?
No, this is like major story implications.
Okay.
Like this moved the plot along for me. Like,
it did. It answered some questions for me. There's still a couple questions that have not been answered that I thought might come this episode. What for you, Caroline? What is the main takeaway? What's the biggest question or takeaway from this episode?
For me, it was like they are... Look, the way I the way that we consume television now in the very online time, and I'm not going to step on Alex's toes or anything over this, but there's a lot of like people have expectations and expect those expectations to be met based on like whether or not, and that determines whether or not it's a good show or it's, you know, whatever. When realistically, like rather than letting the show tell you the story, you feel like this urge to like dictate part of the story to the show, which is not, and we've talked at length about landing the plane for season 3, right? Like the stress that we have about these two great seasons, or people have thoughts about season 2, whatever, two great seasons in my opinion. And if this is the last season, like, are they going to land it? And the questions that were answered for me is that they know what they're doing. Like, I trust them. Like, this was such a strong, we know what we're doing episode for me that I was like, I feel really, really good about this. I think now my follow-up questions are like, the Roy and Keeley stuff, I think, is in like a really interesting place where I think they gave us just enough from both of them, plus some little extra tidbits from Rebecca. To where I'm like, yes, I understand. Like, we're going to get so much more about them. I think it showed us, like, in a kind of tropey, sportsy way, that what the team needed. Like, not just Ted doing strategy stuff, but they have this whole night and they end up, like, just being together, and that's what they needed. So I think there's this whole, and, like, I need to know how Dutchman comes back, because that's that's my big question.
Caroline has resigned from the podcast. She will be moving to Amsterdam and just walking on bike paths trying to find
knocking
herself.
On houseboat doors, looking for burly, bearded, deep voiced Dutchman to feed me and rub my feet.
Frizella.
Oh, I love Frizella. Oh, Frizella.
The dream.
I love him
the
so dream. Much.
The unnamed Dutchman. Okay, so what do we think his name is?
I don't know. I didn't think about that.
Is he a Bob? Is Bob Dutchman?
His last name is actually Dutchman.
I'm not in like the mental space to deal with that right now. I think I want to back way up.
Yeah.
God,
we are like, sober, guys. This is dead serious.
Dead sober.
This
is just where we're at.
Mostly sober. There's been some wine, but it's, you know what? Rebecca drinks wine, and we will too. I'm not going to say it's an answer to, because I don't think "Make Rebecca Great Again" was a question, but I think it is the twin. It is the, what is it that Taylor Swift talks about? She's not the only one, so I'm going to sound really dumb for saying that. What is it? The twin flame. I think I'm using that wrong still, because I think you have to be in a like abusive relationship. I don't know. Anyway, I feel like this is the season 3 version of Make Rebecca Great Again for a few reasons.
This explains a lot why I love it so much then.
It's an away trip, and we see like people having fun, kind of like we did in Liverpool. Did anyone notice the fact that they inevitably chose a pillow fight? And we go back to Make Rebecca Great Again. Ted gave them 2 choices, movie night or pillow fight.
Oh my God.
I missed that.
Yeah. And they had the pillow fight in this one. So like the fact that they ultimately came back as a team to say like, even though we have no curfew, we're choosing to be here with each other, to bond with each other. Obviously the whole Rebecca storyline, like in a different capacity, this isn't so much Make Rebecca Great Again as it is like show her like there are people who see it, girl. Like we know, you know, you're set, like you get it. And like all it takes is a random encounter and like suddenly, you know, which we'll get into that. But
and we get Keely on the TV again.
You get Keely on the TV again. And we end it with the bus. And instead of like people, I mean, Beard has clearly had a fun night, but instead of like people clearly being hungover and everything else, you just end on like this really beautiful scene of everybody kind of having what they needed the night before, whatever that meant. And so
I do this because Alex is like drops knowledge on me every single time.
Caroline, the everyone's singing on the bus. Yeah. Is the tiny dancer scene in Almost Famous, which is a reference you get now.
I get it now.
You get it. Oh my God. It's one of my favorite scenes ever. I mean, yeah, this episode was a big Rebecca episode. Like Caroline said, this is a great pairings episode. A lot of them. Pairings and groups. Roy and Jamie. Higgins and Will. Ted and Beard. And then Ted and his own brain. Ted and also a mountain of onion rings. That is a stout.
It was a huge pyramid of onion rings.
Oh, yeah.
Trent and Colin.
Trent and Colin.
Earlier.
That's a big one.
One of the
Rebecca.
Best ones.
Yeah. That's where for me, this episode might have been the most impactful. And then the team getting together. I will say that the main questions for me coming through this is the what the fuck is going on with Roy and Keely, which I texted you guys that I needed a little more out of the bike ride, the ending bike ride between Jamie and Roy. And I think that is out of just kind of a selfishness perspective of, and I was putting a lot of thought into this, that their relationship has been a constant for us. The build, and then in the middle of it, the build up through season 1, basically the second that they meet, there's something there. And season 1 is slowly, 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 finally and there's something with them in almost every episode. And then we get the season 1 finale when she goes to see him in the locker room, which is one of my all time favorite moments. Their relationship, there are a couple episodes centered around their relationship in season 2. And then so that has been one of the constants for me in the show, and something I love is those two people. And there has been, we have had the scene with them and Phoebe together, and then some random interactions, him when he's doing the media 2 episodes ago, I think, and then this episode, just a brief interaction, her thanking Roy for doing this interview. And other than that, it's been a gaping hole
for you.
Mm-hmm. It's been a gaping hole. And so that is a hole I need filled, because this couple is something that I love about the show. These two actors together.
Yeah.
And then, so here's the thing. And this could be like question for later episodes. I should say this at the end of the pod, but I'm going to say it now. Is the Dutchman the knight and or shite and knighting armor or whatever? Or is this a ruse?
If this is a ruse, I'm going to be furious thing.
He's got the bedroom with the daughter and...
If it's a ruse, you do not go to that much trouble to tell us that much about him and his life. Mm-hmm. And you do not go to the trouble of showing Rebecca at her most vulnerable, mind you. So she's a very proud woman, always very put together. Like, what's funny, when I saw her, like, as her hair was drying, like, she and I both have fine hair. And like, if you have fine hair and it's kind of curly naturally, you look not great when your hair is drying. Like, you know those movies and shows where like the girls look so cute and their hair gets really wavy and like, oh my gosh, beach waves. It doesn't look that way when you have kind of thin, fine, but sort of wavy hair. And like, so we saw her at like, she was, you know, no makeup, nothing. Like, this was her. And they don't go through all that for it to be nothing, or for it to be a misdirect, or for it to be like, this was not a situation. Remember from Make Rebecca Great Again, it was a one night stand and we're done. We didn't learn a backstory about the waiter or the bartender or whoever he was. That was not what it was about. She needed to get back out there. This is different. This man has a daughter. This man like invests in her. They sing Kenny Rogers together.
He was in aviation.
And there are a lot of questions about it. I know you don't hop on that. There are a lot of questions about it, of course. Like, oh my God, they didn't exchange contact info, blah, blah, blah. All the more reason why this is not going to be the last of this guy. Like, this is Caroline said it, or I'm going to give her all the credit and she could elaborate. She's like, they stuck a Hallmark movie in the middle of this. And I'm like, yes, an incomplete Hallmark movie, but this is exactly how that shit happens. Someone falls into a canal. I mean, the premise is so wild, but it's a classic rom-com. Like, it's so romantic.
It's the, you don't know, like he's ever, oh, I'm, I don't want to get into all my Dutchman stuff yet. We're not there yet.
There were quite a few movie, either direct movie references in this episode or things that reminded me of movies. And this reminds me, this whole Rebecca plotline from this episode reminds me a lot of, have you guys seen Before Sunrise?
And After Sunset? And what's the third one? What's the third one?
Something like that, or After Midnight or something like that. Because there's Before Sunrise.
Absolutely.
We will do Before Sunrise at some point. Like,
okay, great. It's
this movie.
It's a trilogy.
Ethan Hawke,
starring Julie Delpy,
directed by Richard Linklater, set over the course of like 20 years. Caroline,
it's incredible, and it's very like each movie is limited to a certain amount of time because there's always like a situation where somebody has to go, and it's just them. Like it's almost like real time where they just like fall. It's so, yeah.
Caroline, folks, like
sunrise?
Tomorrow.
What is it?
They're not long.
Like, you can be late to work. But no, they're not long. And I will say, at least for the first two movies, because I have thoughts about the third, but like the first, it's just a wonderful, like, we only have this.
Oh my
this,
God,
we-
I'm going to Vienna.
Yeah, Caroline. Caroline,
yes,
again.
Yes, you are.
Tomorrow. Or tonight.
It's the perfect example of a piece of art. It has restrictions, right? So we're restricted on time. We know she's got to leave tomorrow. We're restricted on like things that they don't have. Like obviously she's without clothes. She's kind of forced to be here. And they're just restricted in space. They're in this tiny little houseboat that's so cozy and cute. And he definitely uses space efficiently. But we are aware the entire time that there is a deadline here. Like there is a moment where like she can't just stay on the boat. Mm-hmm. She's got to go.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very romantic.
I'm glad you brought that up. I can't wait to finish recording and then go tell Jacqueline, hey, you know what this reminds me of? This, because I just thought of it. But yeah, very, very Before Sunrise-y. And Caroline, tomorrow.
Yeah.
A couple other movie references too. But yeah, that like bottle. Like if we get into best scene, it's not Is it like, is there a best standalone scene? Because I kind of ended up breaking it down into, because we have the scenes where everyone's together. We have, you know, no curfew on the bus, that Roy and Jamie take off. I have questions about like how just running Jamie endurance is training. You know, I would like some more, maybe some more skill oriented stuff, but he's doing like the Coach Carter. He's doing like the Coach Carter thing of like, we're just going to run. Like, we're going to be in better shape than the other team. But then we have people start splitting up. We've got the, you know, the canal fall meet cute, and then everything going on with Rebecca and the Dutchman. We have essentially the team is almost in like a one act play. It's like a debate. Their lobby debate is a one act play. And then we've got what Ted is doing with himself. We get Rebecca on the boat, and then we get Colin, and then Jamie and Roy. So it's like, there's no real set scene. Is there one thing that jumps out as like a standalone scene, or did you have, I guess, a favorite of the, you know, the duos or the groups working on things?
I think standalone, I immediately go to Colin talking to Trent where mm-hmm. they're sitting outside having the beers. Cause I think that's a beautiful scene where we learn about that's where it confirms that Trent is also gay and that they have this conversation. He's like, that's the second time I came out to her. I believe he's talking about his wife, was my understanding. And then Colin asks, I thought it was the sweetest thing that Colin asked about his daughter right away. And she's like, she's never been happier. Absolutely love that scene for the emotion and the storyline purposes, and just like Colin bearing his soul and talking about like how he just has this ache inside. It's just, it's heartbreaking. And at the same time, I am optimistic about where that's going to go. Like, I feel like, again, this is where I'm like, I feel like the writers are going to, like, cause he didn't say I'm terrified to come out in front of my team. Like, the thing that stood out to me too is the line where he's like, mm-hmm. I don't want to be a spokesperson. Like, he doesn't want this to be a spectacle. Like, he just wants to be Colin and he wants to be
able to kiss his fella. So I actually wrote the whole thing down because to me, that was the most, if we're getting into like the big chill is, that was it for me. This speech from Billy Harris, an ache for both of my lives to be my only life. And I'm not going to do this in Colin's lovely accent. I don't want to be a spokesperson. I don't want a bunch of apologies. All I want is when we win a match to be able to kiss my fella, just like the guys get to kiss their girls. I know we don't get to fix every ache that's inside of us, but I shouldn't have to pretend it's not there either.
Well, it's so sweet. It makes me get really emotional.
Mm-hmm. So that's also just a reminder that marginalized people in this country just want to be who they are without being bothered. And
yeah, doesn't want to be a spokesperson. Just wants to be Colin. Anyway, it's a beautiful scene. Jamie teaching Roy to ride a bike is one of the funniest things I've ever seen, especially specifically when Roy is air pedaling. I don't know what it was. Like the physical comedy in that scene from Brett Goldstein is impeccable. Like how he fell over on the bike so many times. Like, I don't understand like how, and he's like, you pick it up so angrily.
When
like,
he
just
picks it
scene.
Up and chases after Jamie with it. But that's when we get another movie reference, the direct homage to Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid. The raindrops are falling on my head, riding the bike, like perfect, no notes.
And then I'm actually going to throw in when Ted thinks he's tripping and he's just is talking to the true spirit of adventure and he goes, ooh, I like that. That scene I thought was a ton of fun because it was very creative and clever. I thought I can't pick one Dutchman scene, so no, I'm not picking
Alex
one of those,
is there one for you?
Perfect.
I mean, yeah, I think like, well, yeah, it's hard to pick one like scene with the Dutchman. I mean, at some point in this podcast, we are going to have to address like, did Rebecca have a footgasm? Because I'm pretty sure she had a footgasm. And it's not, I'm not being gratuitous. It's not about the sex part of it. I'm not like Van Damme trying to go to a sex show. It's just like, do you understand? Like, he just saw her for exactly who she was. I'm projecting hardcore here, by the way, listeners. I understand that. We got into our vulnerability last week, but I am a 36-year-old single mother. I get it. Believe me, if anyone gets it, I do. But like, this whole time, even going back to when Roy said, you deserve someone who makes you feel like you've been struck by fucking lightning, and our heads built up this idea of someone who was larger than life, right? In like superficially speaking. So we imagine like someone rich or powerful or whatever. And we have somebody who is larger than life in like all the ways that matter. You know, like he makes her the tea. He makes a joke about how it's not drugged. He leaves the houseboat because she's taking a shower and that's awkward. Can I tell you, a man who respects the fact that you don't want him around you all the time? And like the food, the music, the dancing,
I bet the food smells.
Massage.
Singing. Oh my God.
I bet it's incredible.
Oh, I bet he smelled great.
I bet he smelled great too. He did not go. He wasn't trying to impress her. He wasn't like John Wings Knight, you know, with his dumb bullshit. He was just a guy who saw a girl and thought she was phenomenal and had an evening with her. And I just love that. Yeah. Like, that's what makes rom-coms good. Like, I know we all buy into like some of the more, you know, I don't know what the word is here, like kind of emptier ones that you don't really feel like you're invested, but you just kind of want to see the payoff. This was so rich and like, yeah, there's a little frustration of like, you didn't get his name. When are you going to see each other again? But there's such satisfaction in the way they played that. And he's not some knight in shining armor. He's a normal person who's incredible. And I think that's such a wonderful thing. So sorry, that was long.
And he didn't overtly, and this might sound crazy to people, he didn't overtly hit on her. Like,
no.
It was all very, like, he offered up things that were definitely could be or were romantic overtures type things, but it was like, you know, would you like a drink? Would you? And that was just, like, the chemistry and the vibes that they had, where it's just, like, and he said at one point, he offered the foot rub, and when she's like, no, no, that's too much, and he's like,
my technique is sound.
Oh my God. And he's like, all right, well, you can stand there on tired feet completely sober. It does not affect me at all. And it wasn't a dismissive, rude, like, she was turning him down and now he was mad about it type thing. It was literally just like, okay, whatever makes you happy. It doesn't bother me. And I just was, oh gosh. He was fantastic. I am in love with him.
My only other one, and I'll make this quicker than that one. That was a whole thing. When Ted's at the museum, looking at the sunflowers.
Love it.
I hope I've got a Mississippi follower, at least a Southern literature follower, listener. I keep saying follower. Who's going to call me out on this because I should remember this word for word and I don't. There is an old story, I don't know if it was ever confirmed, about William Faulkner. I'm going to get every detail of this story wrong, but just listen for the point. William Faulkner being in a cafe in Paris, I think it was Paris. And imagine being in Paris, most romantic, beautiful city in the world. And oh my God, the fact that I can't remember the quote is really infuriating me. But he essentially says, like, you know, this time of year is when like the butter beans are growing in Mississippi. That doesn't even make sense, but like, it was something about Mississippi. He's in the most brilliant, wonderful place in the world, and he's thinking about home, and it always stuck with me. And I'm just, oh, I wish you could cut all that out, because I'm gonna get so much shit for that. The fact that I should know that by heart, and I think I'm tired. He's looking at Van Gogh's sunflowers. He's in Amsterdam. It's an incredible, improbable life for somebody who came from where he came from. But you also have him doing this at the same time that you're getting the museum guide next to him saying, you know, Van Gogh came from humble means, but he kept believing in something. And just like the fact that the first words out of his mouth were like, you know, this is, and I brought this up last week, this is the state flower in Kansas. Like, he's home. He's thinking about home. And it was just such a powerful, like, they didn't have to say too much. He didn't have to have a big like revelation, because I don't think he needs one. He knows exactly where he's headed. And it was just such an important device, I think, from a storytelling perspective. Okay. You guys talk. I'm going to look
at this. It's funny. We're a different level. You're just so much more cultured of me, because you, I assume that like the word, yeah, well, the word butterbean to you leads to a William Faulkner quote. And to me, it leads to the skit from Jackass the movie, where the boxer Butterbean knocks out Johnny Knoxville in a department store. And yeah, which is phenomenal.
Oh,
department
Lord.
Store boxing, one of my favorites.
Yeah, I don't know anything about that.
With that, Ted, though, and I just kind of looping it into my favorite Ted moment of the episode, is we have, and this is something we have, I don't want to say we've criticized Ted or his character or whatever, but we have long talked, and this is like if we're doing the what would Mike say if Mike was here, we have talked about when is Ted going to go all in on soccer and figuring it out. He's changed the culture with his team. He gives this great rallying speech that we really needed at the end of last episode. This is the first time where he has taken the initiative himself to figure out something to get this team going other than finding ways to mentally motivate them. And, you know, watching Jordan in those 90s Bulls, this episode makes a great double feature, I guess, to the movie Air. But I loved, and yeah, you know, he comes up with it on his own and then finds out from Beard that this is a soccer technique that has been around since the 70s, but would work for them. But that to me is such like one of the biggest moments of progress in this episode is like, if this is going to be Ted's last hurrah with AFC Richmond, he's going all in with it. And that I love that he's like, I'm going to figure out a way to win because this is important. This isn't just important to my team, to the team's owner. This is important to me. This is something I can do. It shows like Ted at his best. Cause I bet when Ted was coaching Division II Wichita State, I bet he was in on that game plan. Ted knows football, and it has taken a little bit longer than maybe you would have liked, but Ted is trying to get a grip on football. And I'm in on that. I love that. I loved it. The recipe with the 50 sauces and the nice queso from Puerto Rico. Yeah, Ted just needed a little taste of home with a waiter from Melbourne who didn't know any of the euphemisms for or nicknames for Chicago.
Where they sat him down. Where they sat him down. Chance the Rapper.
Chance the Rapper.
Incredible.
It's
such a great touch.
Yeah, just yeah. A lot of good. The thing with Colin and Trent, I just want to circle back on that one time, is I thought about the panic that Colin must have felt when Trent came across him at the bar and like as he's running out. Like that is heartbreaking. Yeah. That is a real authentic thing for many people living in that community. And like Colin thought for a half second, Colin thought his life had come crashing down, and to see it turn out this way and to see what we all thought Trent be an ally to him. And seems like he's going to be able to be kind of a guiding force. And I think if we're getting into the prediction business, I think what Trent does for a living will help Colin. Colin, I think, will be able to set the terms of his own coming out story. And I see Trent being kind of an asset for that. And it confirmed a lot of things about what we think is going to happen with that story. But I thought that was all very well navigated.
It was also something I think that they did well in a touching, sad kind of way, was he was downstairs with them, mm-hmm. with the team, debating on what they were going to do. And it was once they kind of got it down to this, like, oh, we can go meet girls at this party 2 hours away, or a sex show type thing, where he was like, oh, the bad pickled herring, I gotta go. Like, it was heartbreaking in the sense that, like, he wanted to hang out with the team, but he was again in a situation in which he wasn't going to be comfortable if the, like, it was a very heterosexual plan.
To be fair, those were two terrible options. Horrible ideas.
Terrible ideas. I would have gone with Danny to see the tulip.
Yeah, if we're getting into the whole team thing, that is why every bachelor party needs to have a set schedule. We're golfing this day, we're eating here that night, we're golfing here that morning, and then we are eating at the house that night. It has got to be a set schedule, or it is a disaster every time because it just turns into arguing and nothing gets done.
The suggestions. Like, I wrote down the suggestions from each person, and they were so perfect. Just like, who suggested what? Because it's like, what is the guy's Bumbercatch? I called him Cumberbatch in my notes. I was like,
that's
I know
what
this.
They based it on. I mean, that's why they. Did
I was
that.
Like, I know this isn't right, but I cannot remember his actual name. Because we had the French guy saying, like, the only good thing to do with Amsterdam is take a train to Paris.
I love that.
Which when they have wonderful. the explosion about the food, when Danny says, we're in Holland, we should try Dutch food. And then he stands up as a Frenchman. I would rather die.
The Hague, just to poke around, ask some questions. And then Danny saying, I would like to see a tulip. And they're like, you mean like a tulip field? He's like, just one tulip. An entire field would be incredibly overwhelming.
So
they're so quirky and fun.
Oh my God. Every delivery from him is perfect. Yeah,
it's great to see so them much. having the pillow fight. Gotta imagine that's a hefty, I would assume AFC Richmond's just going to pick up the tab for that cleaning bill, replacing
all of the pillows and cleaning up after it. But
it's just good to see them bonding like that. This episode feels like we're at the lowest point on field for AFC Richmond. They get blasted in that friendly.
Yeah.
And then which Roy is not worried about. And then, and then we see them bonding. We see Ted getting on board. It seems like, you know, like the song says, everything's going to be all right. So let's take a quick ad break, and then we're going to get back with our categories.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
All right, we're back. And before we get into our categories, we have some revisions to do.
Okay, so Caroline was the one who found the quote I was talking about, and I wasn't that wrong. Go ahead.
It wasn't
Caroline.
Far off. It wasn't far off. So this is from Francis Lamb, Cornbread Nation 7, The Best of Southern Food Writing is where I found this clip. And it says, and then there's the exchange between Catherine Ann Porter and William Faulkner that occurred at a swanky French restaurant. They had dined well. At the end of the meal, Faulkner's eyes glazed over a bit, and he said, quote, back home, the butter beans are in, the speckled ones, end quote.
I kind of got it. Also, fun fact, my laptop is currently being supported by Cornbread Nation 6. That's not a lie.
Are you serious?
Yes. It's one of the books
Stop.
I have.
Stop.
I'll take a photo to prove it. It's literally, it's Cornbread Nation 6 with Julia Reed's book, But Mama Always Put Vodka in Her Sangria, another fantastic Southern book, and then Barry Hannah, Long Last Happy. It's a yes. So
I'm being supported by two empty Nike boxes. So the this writers, all tracks.
The writers always know what they're doing. What can I say?
Oh my God. I thought you were going to be like Cornbread Nation 7. What are you? But no,
it's an incredible anthology, but we'll get to that.
Incredible. That's another
per some notifications I am getting from Discord. I believe as we record, the episode of Ted Lasso has dropped. The people are imbibing this Ted. I should have said, fortunately, the screener gods have been generous to us with this episode.
But apparently yes. You're not supposed to talk about having a screener. Because if you even say you do, that is a spoiler. Oh. And the people do
okay.
not want it.
Well,
no.
Guess what? We don't. We're watching this live. let's get into the Laughing Liam Award for Funniest Character and the Best One-Liner or Best Joke of this episode, because it makes sense to combine these categories and we should stop having them separate just because the producer of the show who put together this run sheet originally is an idiot. It took me six episodes, but I've decided to mash
Thank God we
together.
Fired him.
Yeah, got rid of that dummy. But I'm going to throw out for best. It is one of the first lines of the episode, but it is Roy talking to the reporter. A friendly is a pretend. This is a pretend conversation. You're a pretend person with a pretend job. Just... Roy on friendlies.
And I'm having a really hard time pretending to give a shit. The rest of that. And the best you've seen, that's when I took the picture and was like, is Jan Maas hot? Oh my God. This is like the first like extended Jan Maas content we've gotten too. Cause he also said before the so they're playing Ajax. And the reporter asked him something about like, you know, how demoralizing is this, whatever. Jan Maas says, but luckily our spirits were already broken. I don't know why.
Incredible. That Dutch honesty.
But it was
honesty.
Subtitled. It was just so funny to me, that entire interaction. And then he goes in the hall. Rebecca says the whole thing, and we'll probably get to that in the best quotes thing. But he sees the picture of Zava. Did you see the dates on that?
Wasn't it 2013 to 2019?
No, it was 2013 to 2013. Incredible. So just another nod that Zava is a traveling man.
Yeah, that's the only Zava we see in this episode. Did you like pineapple percussions?
It's so corny, but I do like it. It was good. I do want to go back to that scene though with Roy, because I want to make sure we touch on this for a second. Because I know we all ship Roy and Keeley, who doesn't? While being very open to her finding happiness anywhere and vice versa for him. A very important line dropped here that I don't think was earth shattering, but I think it's important. So Keeley obviously like sees Roy, doesn't seem that affected by it, but she's like, I'm going with Jack. See you later. Rebecca's like, okay. And Rebecca with the heat, like immediately says she's going with someone who feels like they deserve her, or who knows they deserve her, or something.
Believes
like,
they deserve her. Yeah. He's like, where is she going? And she's somewhere that believes they deserve her.
Which throwback to, why the fuck do you think he deserves you, from season 2, episode 1. But also just like, this has been the thing. And it's not just Keeley, it's everybody. Like, it's tough to be in a truly healthy, balanced relationship with somebody who, and I don't want to just chalk it up to like they're insecure. Everybody has insecurities. We don't need to pretend like there are healthy people and insecure people. Please, it's all of us. But truly, like, we're led to believe that Roy walked away. It started last season with the Vogue shoot or whatever, when he's like, she looks great without me. Like, his whole belief that he wasn't enough is what got them here. And instead of Keeley like coddling him and being like, oh no, you totally deserve me, like, you're great, da, 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 she's like, well, I will move on with somebody who feels secure in this. And I just like, props to Keeley. I love that.
Is that line from Rebecca a figure your shit out? Is that her saying figure it the fuck out?
Yeah.
And she delivers it in a way where I didn't think, like, I don't think that she hates Roy. You know what I mean? Like, no. She doesn't say that to be like, oh, well, you were mean to my friend. Like, she's straight up truth tells him, like, she's somewhere where they think they deserve her. And the look on his face is, you're right. Like, what am I doing? And that's where he gets in one of my other favorite lines, just random things where, after Ted says no curfew and Jamie's all excited, not for you, Todd, from the back of the bus, he makes him get off. But it's not a cruel thing from Rebecca. It's a straightforward, like, this is, yeah, you are my friend, but I am telling you straight up that you mess this up. Like,
yeah.
But it also gives hope of like, hey, if you can figure that out, you can, like, that's the only thing there. It's not that she's gone with the love of her life. It's
although
like,
it would be very cool to like have a private jet take you to see the
would
like,
be extremely sick.
Alice in Norway.
Extremely sick.
Be great.
That would I would be all in on that.
Yeah.
As far as other jokes, I really feel like once everyone splits up into groups, the only, I guess Roy and Jamie have some laughs and stuff like that, but the funniest interactions are the team all being together. Danny, when it's like, and there was one vote for tulips.
Oh, one vote Danny, for tulips. I think there was one for tulips,
someone
right?
Voted in Spanish.
And I think someone picked tulip, yes, but who? And they goes, Danny, it's written in Spanish. He goes, someone wrote it in Spanish, yes. The entire, because there's also a moment where like they start talking again. I think it's like when they're like, oh, we can just split up. And Danny, if you listen, you hear him say like, who wants to go to the tulips with me? Like, he's in on these tulips, and I just love it. I will say the one non-team one that got me is Will had a couple good ones, because he was like, "Everything all right at home" was my favorite, like, quick throwaway line, because he's like, "We're going to the red light district," and everyone's like, "Oh, sweet Higgins, he doesn't know what that is." Like, they're like, "Nah, like, whatever." And he knows where he's going, he knows what he's doing. Obviously, like, it's a hilarious setup to me, like, he phrases it that way, and, you know, you can believe or not if you think he's naive enough where he doesn't think people would hear that and think he's taking Will to, well, we get a story from Jamie later on what you can do with the, and right before they get to the thing that he's going to show him, which is the plaque on the wall inside the hotel, Will's like, "Is everything all right at home?" I don't know why that made me laugh so hard. But then also when Will's like, "And we're going to solve his death." That they're on some mystery about some, like, century-old jazz musician who either committed suicide or jumped out a window, that he thinks that is, like, the best possible thing. And then at the end, he has the joke line about the, or not even joke line, but he has a line about, like, "Oh, and then this nice couple invited me to be in a threesome." He had a solid episode.
Yeah. Good Will Kitman episode. I think the hardest I actually laughed was when Beard gets out of the van at the end dressed as Piggy Stardust. I think that made me, like, that was the one moment from the show that hurt my ribs, which is just, it's just great use of Beard. And Beard is so good because he is just this blank canvas where he could have hopped out of a van dressed in any way and they could have gone as ridiculous as possible. And one, we would believe it. We would be like, yeah, sure, Beard, you know, got himself into that kind of situation where he ended up dressed like that. And two, it would be funny. Like, he is the perfect kind of, he's so eccentric that we will now believe anything about him, which is beautiful.
Well, and two, like, we have to remember the show would not exist if he and Jason hadn't done shrooms in Amsterdam. That's where it was born, was them doing shrooms and coming up with the idea for the show. So, like, what's fun about that is when he did that, I was like, I bet that happened. I bet, like, they got separated.
Piggy Stardust.
And Brendan came back as Piggy Stardust. I just, you know, and Brendan wrote this episode, actually. So, I mean, you know, they're all brilliant writers. So it's not like, oh, wow. Yeah, I mean, they all write great episodes. But I do think this was a very special episode for them. I'm not going back to my old Amsterdam ways. I'm just saying, like, we've been waiting on a lot of stuff for this episode, and the fact that they went back to where it started and paid homage to Chicago, because the whole reason they were there is they were with Boom Chicago, traveling comedy troupe, which, by the way, Boom Chicago, which, like, I don't know their deal. I need to go back and look, but I guess, like, there is a Boom Chicago in Chicago, and it's kind of like Second City where they have a traveling troupe. So you have the people who are actually at the club in the, like, Chicago, Toronto, wherever, but then you have people who travel and do tours, and so you have, like, a stationary Boom Chicago in Amsterdam now, and they're doing like a whole big reveal of, like, this episode next week. I saw it on Facebook. Anyway, sorry, told you it was gonna be off the rails. Do you know what's funny? Can I just say this and we can move on? I've been kind of updating my Twitter. I just want to see what people are saying about it. And so I just searched Ted Lasso.
I did too.
You have a lot of different, like, reactions, but you have to remember there are still people who are just now picking up on the show. So you have people who are like, "What? I can't believe this. This is crazy. A guy on a boat." And then you have a tweet like, "Why is Higgins in the broom closet? Can't we get this man in office?"
That's been the fun thing about this show, is everyone experiencing it at different times. That was one of the beautiful things about last year, was so many people got into it for the first time. So we're all in season two there. It's been a fun show to experience, like, that, with everyone getting into it. This season has been the first time it's felt like episode drops and it starts to trend on Twitter. It might just be because it's been a while, but I don't know if season two had that same feel.
No, I think, yeah.
I just think the stakes are higher now, especially because everybody assumes this is the last season. And you have people who are invested in different storylines, especially people who want Ted and Rebecca ending up together. And there's a fandom that's been created around that in general, you know, and I've talked about it a lot. Like, they do fan fiction and fan art, and, like, people are so invested in the outcome, I think, that every week has sort of become like a competition of who was right and who was wrong. Whereas we just didn't have that in the first two seasons. It was just like, hey, how great is this? Oh, another good episode. Crazy. Like, that's all it was.
So what faction of this fanhood do you think was wrong this week?
look, here, I want to be very clear about this. I do not consider all Ted Becca shippers a one group, because I actually, like, I have a lot of mutual follows and people I follow. That's natural. Like, everybody gets invested in a show. They all have their own things they want to see. Certainly a lot of us can remember how devastated we were at the end of How I Met Your Mother. You know, which I don't think this is a situation like that at all, but I can, you know, I think we can all emphasize that. It's not about people believing one theory or another. However, there are certain parts of that subgroup. They're just online bullies. They're just mean. And Caroline saw some, well, I mean, we don't know directly, but, like, you know, last night Caroline had shared that she had seen the episode. All she said was it to her personally, that it was one of the best episodes of television she had seen this year. Did not reveal anything about the plot, didn't say anything. And just all of a sudden people, like, got really mad about the fact that if you got a screener, you shouldn't talk about it. I mean, it's just very mean. And so, like, the irony of taking a show that is all, like, it's kind of rooted in this idea of, like, you don't have to be an asshole. The whole show is based on that. You really don't have to be an asshole. And you have this small group of people who are just, like, bound and determined to, like, spew hate and everything else online. And it's, you know.
See, if it doesn't happen that way, the way that they want it, you know, we've seen people, like, tweet that they've been gaslit for three seasons. And we talked about it a little bit before, I think, or we've tweeted about it for sure. I think we talked about it last week. Where, like, it felt a few times just, and this has been a new this season thing for me. I don't know if this group existed or just weren't as vocal or weren't as, like, maybe because this is the potential assumed last season of it. That, like, it's so intense that, like, if it doesn't go this way, I feel like I'm watching a different show than they are, because everything's, like, you know, this happened and this happened.
It has to be a certain way. Yeah.
Yeah. And so therefore, because I was trying to explain it to my sister, who has seen zero episodes of Ted Lasso, where it's like, you know, analyzing to the down to the level of, like, if they're standing in the hallway in the same place with, like, is her dress was cut differently at the neck. And when she was talking to one character, it was a scoop neck or, like, a crew neck type thing, which means she was more closed off to them versus the, like, V-neck dress when she was talking to Ted. Therefore her heart's more open. I'm like, what?
Which, again, like, that's all fun stuff.
Yeah.
I'm not pulling that. Like, we have had so many bonkers, mainly me.
Definitely not knocking
bonkers me. Theories on the show based on the tiniest of details. So that is not what we're talking about.
No, not at all. No.
It's when they take that and they use it aggressively against people who just don't see it. And they're like, well, actually, did you look at the neckline? It's just like, come on, this is supposed to be fun. Regardless of who ends up with whom. And, like, I trust these writers to deliver whatever they want to deliver. And we're going to be on board with it. It's just, of all the things to make, like, controversy out of, this show just really isn't it. And it shouldn't be it.
Well, and this whole thing is just about reaches and inferences of things that might not be there. This isn't like Keely and Roy, where this is a couple. They're now split up. Like, there's more skin in the game. There's more, like, obvious will they, won't they in there. This isn't Ross and Rachel. This isn't Jim and Pam. Like, this is putting a lot of people putting a shit ton of stock into something that might not be there at all. That, in our opinion, isn't there.
In our opinion, but they see it. And I respect that. Like,
and the thing is, it's just when these people, especially the ones who are very aggressive about it, they're going to see all those texts he was sending to Rebecca. Ted was sending to Rebecca, checking in on her during Amsterdam, and they are not going to see her foot orgasm. They're just going to ignore that.
Well, I'm already seeing tweets that I knew would happen. I think I mentioned this to you, Caroline, that are saying because she knew that Kenny Rogers song, and, like, in the pilot, he talks about, like, best concert you've ever been to. Mine was Kenny Rogers, The Gambler. They're using that as a sign that, nope, it's going to be Ted. Like, this is a misdirect. Yeah. And, like, if it is, we'll deal with it when it happens. But, like, I'm too old and I don't have the energy to get that invested in something. And this is my favorite show ever. And I cannot be that invested in this.
If this is a misdirect, Ted, we might delete the pod feed. We might just pretend. We might just pretend the show never happened.
I mean, Ted's options of who to hang out with on this trip are limited. They're limited. He cannot text the team. He's the coach. Like, He can't go out in Amsterdam with the team after he gave the team the night off with no curfew. That defeats the purpose, because like, regardless of if they all have a good relationship, he's still the coach of the team. Like, so it, that to me was where I was like, okay, yeah, it makes sense that like he would text Rebecca, because it's not, you know, maybe Higgins, but anyway. So yeah, it's just a very, rather than, and what I am afraid of is that folks just won't enjoy the episodes for what they are.
I know.
Which is, this was a really good, and that's where I was panicking about with Alex over the past day and a half now, where I was like, a lot of the people that were quote tweeting like, oh, now, so here's the thing. Here's what I tweeted a couple weeks ago or whatever, a week ago and some change after episode 3 of this season of Succession. I won't spoil anything. It was an excellent hour
pretty,
of television.
Pretty good.
It was really good. And I had tweeted out like, look, in the last 5 months or so, we've gotten the No Way Out episode of Andor. We've gotten the Long, Long Time episode of Last of Us. And we've gotten that Succession episode, which like, three really good hours of television that I enjoyed. And I quote tweeted last night and said I would put Sunflowers in there for me personally, because there's so much of this episode that I absolutely loved. And I would understand that if other people don't, if it's not going to get the same reviews, or it's not as critically acclaimed, or it's not going to be talked about as much, like that's fine. A lot of what I think were based on the like profile pictures and screen names are Ted Becca shippers, which again, totally fine. Like I appreciate that. That were saying like, oh, now I'm excited. Oh, now this and that. And I was terrified they were going to come back and be like, it was a terrible episode because it didn't go the way that they wanted it to go story-wise. And so that's where I'm like, I just feel bad like if you don't get to like enjoy what they're giving us, because it was a really good episode.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
So much wonder.
I agree. I want to, the fun thing about people experiencing this in real time, I want to give a shout out to Danny Weiser, who's a patron of the show. Has a great podcast of his own, The Rank Kings. He's been a guest on this show before. And I can see in the Rank Kings Discord that he is, him and people in that Discord are kind of live watching it right now. And he's had a couple drop-ins that I think are, I just would like to add. Zero is that weird friend, which is, yep.
Van Damme. Sorry, Van Damme. His name is Van Damme now.
He also said, am I about to fall in love with a bald Dutch man? Which, yes. Yes.
Does anyone know who is he? What has he been?
I'm hoping that they will drop the info now on IMDb, like, now that the episode's live.
I have a question about this. If we're talking about Ted and the texts and not getting a hold of Rebecca, and if we're talking about like the best Ted moment of the episode, it's probably him figuring out soccer, but checking in on Rebecca, whatever. if one of the richest women in England who owns a Premier League team went completely missing, phone dead, no one has heard from her for 12 hours, all points bulletin, yeah. You think? Like, we're getting the, I don't know what Dutch cops are called, but we're getting the Dutch cops.
At that point, you're definitely texting Keely. Mm-hmm. You're definitely Sassy even.
Because Sassy was on the phone with her and it sounded like something happened.
I know. Wait, was she still on the
phone?
Or did she already
know? No, she hung up.
Oh,
okay.
Well.
So maybe at that point, maybe on the... Yeah, I do find it a little strange. I find a few things strange about this episode. Like, for instance, so back in the Christmas episode, Roy could not walk around his posh neighborhood without having to, like, crack his knee back into place, but he ran for hours across Amsterdam with Jamie. You cannot handle that. You need an elliptical for that knee, sir. But anyway,
speaking of Jamie, can we give the Rupert Award for the biggest villain of this episode to someone who actually was not in the episode, and that is Jamie's dad?
Yes.
We didn't need any more evidence.
Was he a villain?
About how
he didn't have any power over him, though. Like, he was a villain before, but like, this is Jamie's freedom. This is Jamie.
Oh, I think his dad. I think he means the, you know, when Jamie was 16.
Jamie was 14.
That, yeah, okay.
I'm sorry.
That 14, that did lead to a funny, kind of a funny moment, like funny but sad, when Roy said something about, like, yes, that's terrible or something
must
like that.
Must have been traumatic.
Must have been traumatic.
You. He said it must have been traumatic. Oh, he said it must have been traumatic. And he goes, no, she loved it. And then he goes, oh, for me. Honestly, just that exchange, that response from Jamie, the growth that showed alone, mm-hmm, just in that 10-second response where he goes, no, she loved it. Oh, you mean not for me? And then this was, like, to me, one of the most poignant, like, sad, thoughtful moments, was because we've heard a lot about his dad. We've met his dad. We've seen what a dick he is, like, how horrible he is. Like, you know, we've seen him punch him, all this stuff. And he'd always spoken so highly of his mother, mm-hmm. right? Like, when he put the... It was his football boots, right? That he brought in to put in the, there's too many ghosts. That's too many ghosts. And he talked about how he wanted to play to make her proud, right? So he has a story about his dad bringing him to Amsterdam and taking him to the red light district to lose his virginity. And he said he didn't remember really what that experience was like, which, again, whole other level of, like, talk to Dr. Sharon type stuff. But he then says he came back 2 years later with his mother, and that's where he learned all the stuff that he was telling Roy. Like, he went to the museums. He learned what, also the funniest thing he pointed out was, like, down there is the bench from The Fault in Our Stars. Sorry, that was hilarious. Just the shortest clip where he's like, oh, down there is where the, but he, the stuff where we got the most electricity out of Jamie was when he was talking about Amsterdam. And, like, he took this thing where normally he would have complained the entire time, having to be stuck with Roy, having to train, like, whatever. And he turned this into this, he flipped it on its head, turned this into this running tour. And he said, you'll never, he had his first Stroopwafel, like, with his mother. And he's like, that's something you never forget. And I was like, that is the sweetest, saddest, most touching bit of information that we got from Jamie in this episode, in my opinion. Like, it was just this, that was the story. He didn't go there for the stag do. He didn't go there because he got, they had to turn the plane around because he was being enough of a dick or whatever. The little dance thing that he did after that, whatever, was priceless. But I just thought it was a beautiful moment of a glimpse into his character even further, because what he clearly cherishes, like, is that relationship with his mother and what an impact that had, and that he was able to run Roy around for hours showing him this fake European city with his fake fucking windmills.
We've only had the I don't think you realize how psychologically healthy that is award since this season, but I think we have mentioned Jamie for the which character showed the most personal growth in this episode. I think we've mentioned Jamie every single episode for it.
100%. And, like, I just love how he knows so many facts. It's like, yes. Yay, Jamie. But you know what I really loved here? And I swear I'm not trying to reach. I think this was intentional. I just don't think it's, like, groundbreaking. The fact that this episode was so focused on Granddad, and we go back to the beginning of the series when he used to call Roy Granddad. You know, like, it was the crux of, like, why they got in that fight. And he's like, call me Granddad one more time. And I really, you know, these guys both connect on a level of, like, number one, wanting to be the best at what they do. And number two, having their childhoods robbed by that pursuit. And, like, they probably wouldn't say robbed, because they would say, well, you know, in the end, it worked out for us, regardless of all the trauma and pain and being gone when we were children. But it's more than just training him to be better than Zava or anything. Like, these guys are actually, they're friends now. And also, I can't ride a bike, so I was, like, personally wounded by this episode.
When they laughed.
I know. I was like, come on. And, like, watching Roy fall over, like, I was like, that's me, because I have tried multiple times and I just can't get it. But, I mean, that's a very vulnerable thing to be a grown person. Like, I get so annoyed. Every guy I have dated for the past 10 years, when I tell them that, what do you think they say? I'll teach you how to ride a bike. We can have an adorable little montage. No, fuck no. I am trying to impress you with how smooth I am. And, like, look at my shiny hair. I don't want you seeing me in, like, knee pads and a helmet falling over on a bike. That's
when
vulnerable.
He just went straight down. I laugh so hard at that.
That's
scene.
How it goes, though. That's know, how it works.
When he's like, I can't turn that way. Like, all of it. The guy who got them the bikes, just, he's like, ooh, I love a challenge. Like, went to find another one. Who then again shows up at the end when they ride up on the one bike after Roy crashes the one, which, again, hilarious scene to me. I laughed heartily when he was like, fuck.
When they're just biking and he just veers off the path. So good.
Yes, top notch. No notes. When they roll up to the last two to the bus, roll up on a bike together. Roy hops off, Jamie jumps off, and the guy who stole the bike for them was there to catch it and take it back. It was just like, it's the details. It's the whole thought process. It's the, and we just got so much. There was another really funny. I just really enjoyed that pairing, and I know we've gotten a lot of them at times this season, especially with the training and the conversations and the prima donna and like all this stuff, but I just thought it was such a nice next step where they both became vulnerable, and Roy says the thing like, I think Keely's got a girlfriend. Mm-hmm. Like, this is why I'm picking on you, is because my emotional state is completely disraveled. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, unraveled, anyway, disheveled, whatever, disraveled. It's both. Disraveled now.
for the food poisoning award, for which moment from this episode gave you the most stress?
The pickled herring. Even though we know we didn't eat it, I was like, come on, legitimate. Colin. Yeah.
Well, I mean, that was a was not a good excuse. Was very abrupt, especially after he had just made the remark about I didn't come to Amsterdam to learn things. And it's like, wait, things. I'm out. I'm out. Like,
yeah, I mean, I didn't come here to do school. I love that.
Oh, man. Shout out to
I mean, the real answer is when Trent finds him in the in Prick. Great name for a club.
Thunderdome.
I think my personal answer when I was the most uncomfortable or stressed is when I need to figure out how Dutchman finds her again. Like, their goodbye was both magical and extraordinarily stressful for me personally.
So she is easy to find, I would say. She is famous.
Do we think he knows who she is?
No.
Because like when it came down to them saying each other's names, they both didn't know them. Well, they acted like they didn't know them, at least, and they didn't exchange them.
Do we think she left something behind accidentally? Accidentally, air quotes.
I mean, what is she going to do? One. Fly to Amsterdam to get a bracelet?
I mean, so that he can track her down. Something that he could track her down.
I think if he knows who she is, that actually makes it more. It doesn't make it as cute.
Yes.
I don't think that's as good. I think she is certainly more easy to find, but also
yes,
getting a hold of her. Like if I was like, I'm gonna call Jerry Jones. Like, like I know where he is. I can't like call the Cowboys office. And it was like me and Jerry Jones just spent a nice time on my houseboat.
I mean, the thing
I knew you were going to use him as an example. As soon as you started that sentence, I was like, he's gonna say Jerry Jones. It's gonna be incredible.
As like the thing is, she knows exactly how to find him, and if he doesn't know who she is, then you know that's not a thing. So I could, you know, see her like jumping on Jack's plane, like she and Keely. I don't know. There are lots of possibilities there.
And I'm not going to ask questions. I honestly do not care how it happens.
I don't either.
I just need it to happen. I don't even care if it's like, I looked up, you know, in the newspaper, there was a picture of you shaking hands with the owner of Ajax. And it was like, you know, blah, 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 blah. Don't care. I'll accept it. Great. We're good.
Like outside of How I Met Your Mother. Name, and I'm not saying this doesn't exist, I'm asking genuinely, name another movie or show that got you invested in a love interest who seems to be unproblematic. They're not dropping any hints that he's creepy, even though the premise is a little creepy, like going in a guy's boat and drinking his tea and shit, wearing his ex-wife's clothes. But like name another thing that had us convinced it was one person with no sign that it was going to be someone else. I can't think of one.
I can't either.
And with How I Met Your Mother, like, even though I'm mad at them, at least, like, they killed her. It's not like he chose.
They killed her.
He murdered her.
The thing is, it's not like he chose Robin over her, is my point. It's not like he was like, then I had some kids, and then I still went with Robin. Like, there was at least a legitimate reason. Like, okay, I can accept that. We just didn't want to see that at the end. It could have just been a death, and then, like, we leave it there, right? I don't see a possibility where this guy is a misdirect.
It better not be. I swear to you, I texted Alex about this too. There's been a whole, like, I found there was this part of TikTok that I stumbled upon where it was like this guy remarking on, like, look at, you know, there's this understanding women, some guys think that women are looking for this alpha ripped, you know, Jack dude that blah blah blah. He's like, look at the people that have gone that the like women on this website freak out over. It's like Pedro Pascal, Tom Hiddleston, Benedict Cumberbatch, and you know, these, you know, and it's not to say that, you know, those guys aren't handsome or whatever, but it's not necessarily this like stereotypical. And so there was just something this is just an example where he was just electric. Like I could not take my eyes off of them when they were on screen together. The like, oh, your clothes are done. and she dumps the water in there, I almost died. It was just like, and he's this dry humor of where she goes, oh, I'm sorry, did she pass away or whatever? Did she die? He goes, unfortunately, no. Absolutely. And he says this thing, and there was so much that she related to, because, you know, he said, he was like, I was wildly in love with her, his ex. He was like, I was wildly in love with her. She was unfaithful. It destroyed me. And I almost let it destroy our family. Like, I was so angry that I almost destroyed our family because of it. And then I realized over time that this thing that happened to me happened for me. And the look on her face, like, it's just like this incredible moment where she's like, this is exactly my story. I mean, minus the family part, which is, I think, where the little girl, anyway. Yeah, he just was, I'm obsessed, clearly. But the vibes were immaculate.
Can I bring up a tiny detail that I don't think is tiny? I mean, it is tiny, but I think it was intentional. Did you notice what color her, okay, this sounds very deranged. Did you notice what color her ponytail holder was?
No.
It was red. What do we know about women of means with ponytails? They wear black, or they wear a ponytail holder that matches their hair. Like, I have a bunch of blonde ponytail holders.
Yeah.
Red is a very much like, that is a little girl's ponytail holder. Like, Rebecca would not be caught dead wearing a red ponytail holder. It's such a faux pas.
Yeah, because she also, like, the chances that she had one with her. Well, she had her hair up when she went into the water.
We need a new category for, like, out, the thing in this episode that Kyle absolutely would not have caught regarding women's clothing.
I'm just saying, ask Jacqueline about it. I'm telling you, like, there are certainly days when I have to use, like, the old scrunchie or whatever, but I'm saying, like, in a professional setting, in any sort of, like, a woman of means, there you have, depending on your hair color, you're either going with solid black and, like, a sleek thing that's not, like, pointing up in the back, or you go with the blonde or the brown or whatever's going to match your hair. I'm telling you, you do not use, like, colorful plain ponytail holders. If you want to do a scrunchie situation, you can be colorful because you're making a statement. It's a movement. Rebecca Welton does not own multicolored ponytail holders, I'm telling you.
No, she's not wearing scrunchies, like, bringing scrunchies to Amsterdam.
This is that, like, the is more now, you know, gif coming across the screen for me.
Yeah.
Is now the time we talk about the did we scene?
Oh.
Because.
Yeah, I didn't realize she was that hammered.
Well, that's one thing. Well, that was one thing where I was like, okay, that's an interesting, like, okay, fine. But more so, the more important part of this, and I think the only reason they had that part happen, that sentence happen, was to get to the, like, when, so she comes out, he's making her breakfast, which, again, king, after when she fell asleep, when he was rubbing her feet, king, puts a blanket over her on the sofa and then goes into his room and, like, closes a little curtain. Love every second of that. That's perfect. They do the, you know, she's like, thanks for everything, you know, did we? And he's like, no, we didn't. And she's like, it was so nice to meet you. And he goes, it was nice to meet you too. And then she kisses him and it is the most electric kiss. Holy shit. It's incredible. Perfect. No notes. A lot of times on TV when you watch, or movies, and you watch and you're just like, that does not look like it was a good kiss. That looked 10 out of 10. No notes.
That
love
looked
it.
Great.
Love it. No notes. She says the thing, which I absolutely love. There's a theme here. I love this. She says, I'll never forget you. And he goes, you might. And she looks at him quizzically and he goes, people get Alzheimer's, which is terrible. But just, like, again, like, the Dutch humor and the vibes. Great. So she leaves and he says to himself, did we? We sure did. Like, oh yes. Oh yes, we did. That's even better. He's like, oh yes, we did. And I texted Alex and I was like, he's talking about falling in love, right? Like, are we on the same page here? Like, this is like, they had a moment. Like, that is a, we had a moment. Like, yes, we did. We had a moment thing, right?
Am I going to say yes? I mean, can we fold that into best time, worst time? Because I think they had a great time.
Best, I mean, minus the fact that she should probably go see a doctor when she gets back after falling in a canal.
Also, she needs to find an Amsterdam Apple store, like, right now.
ASAP. She needs, yeah, she was a little too chill for having lost her phone and Oliver. I mean, if I lost my phone, it would be a disaster. They had the best time.
Yeah. The thing is, I think unlike a lot of the episodes this season, I think everyone had a pretty good time. Ted had a good time of self-discovery, I would say.
Yeah.
I think
Danny had the worst time. He did not see a damn tool.
I bet he loved the pillow fight, though. Roy had physically had a terrible time. That running, Roy's knee is probably three times its normal size in that bus home.
Yeah, Roy had the worst time. He is covered in bruises.
Also, they're riding home on that bus, Jamie and Roy, after being out all night running and biking. They've got to smell, I don't know how far the bus is to the airport, but oh my God, they've got to smell horrible.
Yeah, that was a not ideal situation for them. Also, this is where I was like, my only beef is, how did everybody's stuff get back to the bus? Like, they didn't go back to the hotel first. So was there like a room service thing where they just collected everybody's things? Anyway, I don't need to know. Possibly. That's fine. We'll deal with that in the future. But that was my only. But yeah, I think everyone had a good time except Roy. I think Roy had a pretty bad time, if we're being honest, now that I think about it.
Colin had a wonderful time. Good for him. His time out with Trent was probably so freeing. Like, Trent is his only person now. He knows there's someone in the building that knows who he is through and through. And I think that for Colin is, we get at the end where they're again doing the tiny dancer scene from Almost Famous, when they're seeing everything's going to be all right. Colin reaches forward and grabs Trent's arm, like in a, you know, just a sense of like appreciation and happiness. And I think that was just great to see. I think everyone has a good time. That's solid news for everybody, because that had not been the case. The reporter, actually, the Dutch reporter, probably has a bad time getting dressed down by Roy. I can't imagine that was fun.
I know, and he tried to get a selfie, and Roy walked away.
I can't imagine that one turned out. Lenny Harris Pinch Hitter Award for Best Supporting Character. This is interesting because two of our supporting characters go off together to a jazz club. Like, so they in turn become their own lead characters in their own little story.
Yeah. You know who my answer is, so I think I'm going to sit this one out. Because it's
the Dutchman with no name who we don't know who the actor is. That guy.
Yes. The bearded, shaved head, beautiful, beautiful man that owns a houseboat and was in aviation and patched up. We didn't even talk about when he patched up her foot and was like, first of all, I love that he was like, you have strong ankles. And she said, thank you, I wear high heels every day for work. And then he kissed her foot, which could be weird until you think about the fact he said force of habit, and she goes, all the military training. Which, hilarious. But the force of habit, adorably, is taking care of his daughter. Like, ugh.
And I like that they didn't have him just go in and explain, oh, yeah, my daughter, she's with her mother now. She's this. She loves Frozen. It's like, it's just so much unsaid. And it.
The room. We know.
We know. It was beautiful. Yeah. Loved it. He's my
Big Chill, we've kind of talked about. I think it's the Colin speech. I think Ted kind of having the realization in some way that meeting between him and Beard talking at the end, kind of, again, it's if, and we can roll this into questions for the next episode of things we want to see. I feel like between the speech at the end of last episode, the Ted putting some actual thought into tactics this episode, I feel like the momentum is there for fully activated Coach Lasso. I am so here for it. Yeah. I desperately need it. That's really my big thing for next episode is, how is Ted going to lead the charge to get Richmond back on the tracks? And when are we going to have a scene with Keely and Roy? Because I need it.
I mean, that's the thing. We're only halfway through the season. This felt like an episode that would be like, there are three left. Truly.
Yeah.
It felt like, okay, we're winding down. We know there's going to be some, but like, no, we got to do all this shit all over again. We got to go through another 6 weeks. And so who knows? Who knows what will happen? But I'm excited. I think it'll be good. I think there's a lot of symbolism in pyramids and three and three seasons and blah, blah. But, you know, I think it's going to be great. I'm excited.
Where do we think we're headed next episode? Like, Caroline, what do you think gets addressed in the next episode?
I was just thinking about if I think Roy's, I don't think this is gonna happen yet, but like when we were just talking, this literally just came to me. Do we think Roy's gonna be do a big gesture?
Well,
or is it gonna be like a
next week's episode is called Boxes, and the synopsis is the Greyhounds try a new strategy that has everyone thinking outside the box. Sam prepares to host a VIP guest at Ola's.
Oh,
please be the Dutchman.
And the photo they've used is of Ted back in his aviators, which we haven't seen since season one. Did we see him in season two?
I don't know.
It's a good question. So.
Maybe when he did that weird lead.
I don't think
thing.
He's wearing the aviators though. I think he's wearing like oak, like the kind of glasses Beard wears.
Maybe. So this is definitely Ted and his aviators next to a very stern looking Roy.
Love it. Okay.
So boxes. Sounds I wonder if he goes focused.
Boxes instead of triangles. It's extra funny because one of my friends, Ben, always we had a joke about yelling like triangles with soccer, like that people should play more triangles because it works better. Anyway, I could be the coach. I think they have to see, my guess is that next week we see success on the field. I think that's the next step. They have to right the ship. They have to win post Zava. They have to figure that part out. And Ted has to get some of the confidence back gained from this like self-realization. I think I need to see a little bit of that next week. And we were right. Some of the reviews are coming in. Not people, you know, some groups are not liking what they saw. Finally done with the episode since I skipped a good chunk. Not sure how you're going to make a reasonable assessment of the quality of the episode.
A lot of people are skipping ahead. Yeah.
I've did not like the ep at all. What was up with Rebecca at the end? IDK. It's a skip in my rewatches. 3 out of 10 for me.
That's like I turned on Saving Private Ryan and I watched D-Day and then the scene where Giovanni Ribisi dies. Didn't like it. 2 thumbs down.
Didn't like it. Yeah, a lot of like, why is Rebecca on a date?
Yeah, I mean, you know, it goes back to the
why
point of,
is
like,
this
when
person
decide...
finding someone who makes sense for them? What the fuck is this show
That's...
doing?
When you decide, and this is people, this is just humans, like when you decide that something could be the possible explanation for something, it's kind of like you read an article about, I don't know, red Kool-Aid, and then you go somewhere later in the day and somebody like is drinking red Kool-Aid and you're like, oh my God, that means something. Right.
Yeah.
So like once you've decided in your head that that's a sign, suddenly you're looking for it everywhere. Right.
Yeah.
And I think that's just what it is. I think like you have fans who wanted different things for different characters. And I think once you get it in your head that like this should be the end for them, you see signs of that everywhere. And it's really easy to take, you know, and we do it too with other things, just not this particular thing, but it's easy to look at dialogue and be like, oh, that's supposed to be a misdirect when actually it's nothing at all, right? It's just like, because you're so convinced this is the destination that you're like, the journey to it has to make sense. So
someone said that, you know, Ted was shooting his shot with Rebecca with that text.
And he was lonely. And that was the thing. Ted had to be alone. He had to be.
Yes. Yeah.
Like all other people do for him is like distract him from what he needs to like get right. And like it took some barbecue sauce and Chicago Bulls to activate some memories in his head.
He had to go home.
They had to go home.
He like, decided to go again. You're right. I mean, we talked about, I mean, you're writing the show basically, Alex, where it's like he went and he saw the sunflowers and he is in Amsterdam looking at some of the most beautiful, in my opinion, the most beautiful artwork. By like Van Gogh is my favorite. So he's standing there, and the first thing he thinks of seeing this beautiful piece is this is the state flower of Kansas. And then he goes to a restaurant that had 1 star in the Yelp thing. Like he says it's like 2.7 out of 5, whatever. But if you look, it has like the 1 yellow star thing for this most likely horrible American restaurant where again they don't get any of the actual real American whatever. But he has to go there. He had to go home. He had to. And that's where we're saying that it's like, I see this. And that's the only way he could get out of, that he could figure out what he was doing.
I'm telling you, I've eaten at some really shitty barbecue places since I moved to Northern Virginia. And it's not because I'm naive and stupid. I knew what I was getting into. It's because like, I'm just a person, I've got to touch home for a little bit to feel centered. I really do. And I get homesick very easily. And it's why I like look for organizations that are related to like my alma mater or Mississippi. It's why I try to connect with people who are from there, because even like being around another person who knows where I came from, it changes my entire mindset. Like, I cannot tell you, I can be down, depressed, just not really feeling like I'm good at anything. And just like, what am I doing here? Why am I even trying? Like, why do I even have the job I have? If I talk to someone, I don't even have to like had known them in college or whatever. But if I know they went to my college, if we can sit there and talk about Oxford, or if they just grew up in the South and we could talk about things, like, I'm home again. And I can recenter myself. It's a powerful thing.
You need to take like a couple hour drive into the mountains and like go to Roanoke or go to Botetourt County, and you'll feel a lot closer to home than you are in Nova. I will tell you that.
I did go to, where did I go? It was a town that was like, where? Oh my God! It's where BMI is. Where's BMI?
Lexington.
Yes. Thank you, God. I can remember
like,
that.
I hope that's right.
That gave like 90% of that was great. And also just because like being a Civil War history major, I was like, okay. But then it was like they had a Robert E. Lee festival, and I was like, maybe it's too close. We should get out. I should go.
Is that the time? You like pretend like you hear like, what's that? Oh yeah, I'm coming.
I gotta go.
The last thing I want to say is when Ted got to the museum. And we assumed that we didn't know it was a dud batch. We thought he was on shrooms. And he's looking at the portrait, and someone starts talking to him. I'm like, oh, it's about to be Vincent Van Gogh. Like, Ted's going to hallucinate Vincent Van Gogh talking to him. And it wasn't. It was just the museum curator. But that was...
I was just glad, too. Like, I think it's important that it showed how much, and this is, like, the obvious, like, I think I'm being really deep, but it's the obvious thing. It showed that Ted didn't need to get high and get out of his mind, like whatever. It was all in there. Like it was the placebo effect, right? Like in perfect form. It was great.
This was great. We've gotten through Amsterdam. We are halfway through Ted Lasso season 3. Caroline, where can the folks follow you? We actually didn't do that at the beginning of the episode. They have no idea if there's content.
There's so much content, you guys. You can go read about how we finally saw some Mr. Darcy out of Tom Wamsgans on Succession this week. Very exciting for me personally. My aunt will have written read it, so there's a page for you. Very excited about that. You can find the content over at For the Win, and you can find me at CW Darnie on Twitter, and don't yell at me. That's general rule.
Alex.
You can find me in Cornbread Nation 15. I'm being serious though. And I know John Craig is listening, so he's going to back me up on this. It is a wonderful Cornbread Nation. It's a wonderful anthology of Southern food writing. I don't know if they're still doing it. For some reason, I feel like they stopped. Okay. He'll correct me on that.
You have to send the picture of you.
I'm sending you the picture because like I'm telling y'all, Southern food writing, it's a thing and it's awesome and it shaped my career. So it's a real thing, but I'm just glad I was right about the butter beans. You can follow me at Alex McDaniel.
You can follow me at Butterbean.
You can follow me at butterbeancornbreadnation.com.
.substack, whatever.
And you can catch us next week talking about Ted Lasso. Maybe it drops on Tuesday night. Maybe it drops on Friday. I don't know. We'll see. You can also catch us on next Thursday night doing the first ever live watch in Big Screen Sports history. That'll be fun. That's four patrons. And if you enjoyed this episode, subscribe wherever you get your podcast, rate and leave a review on Apple Podcast, and we will catch you next week. Thanks for listening.